I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, we are here with a Liverpool off-season update. We're joined by Zach Forster, who, of course, you can find on Twitter at @ZachForster_. Zach, pleased to have you back on. Plenty to talk about Liverpool at the moment. We'll start a little bit before the Champions League final. We'll go chronologically here. The start to the trip to Kiev was a very rough one for many Liverpool supporters as flights were being canceled. People were trying to figure things out. I saw a supporter that had been to every Liverpool final in his lifetime wasn't able to make it to this one because of that. What was your take on all of those issues leading into the final?
I think it was just massively disappointing for everyone involved. Obviously, it all started with the Real Madrid fans potentially not attending, around 1,000 deeming it too expensive, basically, to get there, which it probably was with the Far Eastern location. And then it just sort of moved on to Liverpool fans getting dumped on, really. Obviously, the whole thing around the witness-based travel agency sort of organization that couldn't supply the flights in the end to Kiev was really disappointing. But it's I think it all comes down to how UEFA have planned it. I mean, in the end, by all accounts, people who made it to Kiev really enjoyed the experience. It looked amazing on Twitter and, you know, on the news when you were looking at it. But in terms of actually accessing Kiev, it seemed like a logistical nightmare from the beginning. And I feel as if the final shouldn't be that far out. I mean, obviously, UEFA have to plan these things years in advance, so they didn't know that two teams from sort of like the western side of Europe were going to get into the final. So if two teams from Ukraine and Russia sort of got to the final, it would have been great. But getting that many fans, because it was more than 16,000 fans each that travelled over, especially Liverpool, there was probably closer to 30. Getting all those people out there is an absolute nightmare. And it just seems like UEFA need to think this through a bit more logically. Obviously, it was absolutely great. The match went down, as far as I know, without a hitch. The concert beforehand looked amazing. All the fan parks looked really good. Apparently, Shevchenko Park was absolutely awesome. But yeah, for me, I feel like the venues just need to be thought of a little bit more logically, because by all accounts, Kiev was quite difficult to get to.
Yeah, certainly there were a lot of problems surrounding that. But fortunately, a lot of Liverpool fans did end up going there for the final, which ended up being pretty crazy. What were your nerves like heading into that match?
I'm not going to lie, I was quite, I don't know if it was confident. I was nervous when I woke up on the morning of the game, but sort of like traveling there, because I traveled over to Liverpool to watch the game. There was absolutely no chance of me affording going to Kiev, although I would have absolutely loved to. Myself, my brother, a friend, and a couple of cousins, we went across to Liverpool to watch the game. I wasn't sort of like overly nervous. As I've got older, I've sort of like pushed the anxiety to one side, kind of. I don't think I was being overconfident, because I definitely didn't expect to beat Real Madrid in a European final. But I don't know, I just didn't have any nerves, if that makes sense. It's weird. I wasn't here nor there. I was just sort of like looking forward to the game and like the event and having a few drinks with like, you know, good friends.
Yeah, it sounds like it was definitely a good time for those that both stayed home and actually got to make it all the way over. Next up, we'll just get into the match. Obviously, did not go the way you would have wanted. What did you make of the match?
It was really strange. Having rewatched the game, well, a lot of the game, I haven't watched the full game, but I've watched certain individual highlights and the BT highlights and stuff. So I've seen like quite a lot of the game a second time and third time. I found myself sort of missing moments when I rewatched it. I was sort of like, I was like, God, did that actually happen? And it was just because like, I think I was just so stressed at the time. I was sort of missing things. But as I saw the game, I thought Liverpool bedded into the game really well, as we have in big games all season. And Real Madrid sort of looked like they were struggling to contain us. And maybe not contain us, but we were sort of flexing, causing a few problems in those first 30 minutes. And we definitely had the better of the play. I think I saw a stat from it's called Dan Kenny on Twitter. I think it was like 8-2 on shots, only 1-0 on target shots. I think it's from Trent Alexander-Arnold. And sort of the touches in the box, Liverpool were completely dominant in. And I thought there was going to be an opener from us, to be honest. But then, yeah, the game for me, the game just completely changed when Salah became injured. Obviously, the reasons we conceded were not because our star winger and star player was not on the pitch, but it sort of looked like it made us drop 10 yards deeper, and it also encouraged Marcelo on their left-hand side to push forward. And he didn't need to fear Lallana causing him any problems. He's definitely not 100% match fit. And to be honest, the drop in quality when Lallana comes onto the pitch for one of our front three is dramatic. So, when I saw Lallana coming on, I thought it might be okay, like sort of thinking the best. But I think looking back, that was a massive turning point. Then Real Madrid dominated the rest of the first half. And yeah, the second half was just littered with weirdness.
It certainly was. There's obviously been a lot of stuff brought up around the way in which Salah was hurt. What was your view of that injury? Do you think it was intentional, or do you think it was just kind of in the act of play?
I have to be completely honest and stick with my guns. I completely believe that Ramos has injured Salah deliberately. I'm not saying that Ramos has thought, if I do this, he definitely will harm his shoulder and he will have to go off and he'll be out for the rest of the game definitely. But at the very, very least, Ramos is thinking, okay, I've won the ball, I'm winning this duel, I'm gonna leave something on him. And obviously that has been done since football began, you know, over 100 years ago. That's absolutely fine. But the man, Sergio Ramos, I've disliked for many years, so I am biased in this, I will admit. But he's just a nasty man on the pitch. He'll do anything to win. And sort of like the faces and the gestures he was making after Salah had sort of gone off and when he was going off, it just leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. And obviously the reputation of the man precedes him. He's a good player, but as a man on the football pitch, I think he's horrendous. And then the rest of the game, the dive, like the play acting with Mane to get booked, and yeah, it's just... And then the elbow to Karius as well. I can't believe you wait for not looking into that further. I mean, I know they've looked into it and decided not to retrospectively punish, but yeah, that's as blatant as it gets. It's Sergio Ramos, of course, is blatant. So yeah, as you can tell, I'm still quite bitter towards the man.
Yeah, I mean, neutrals certainly should not be surprised that Sergio Ramos has done this in the past. It just depends on if you're true neutral like him or are against him. I mean, they find a way to win, you know. In England, when it happens, a lot of times it's called cheating the ref or, you know, foul play or anything like that. But as you said, they win a lot, and that is one of the methods used by Sergio Ramos to win. But do agree, these kinds of incidents have not surrounded him his whole career by chance, is where I will leave that on my take on it. You mentioned, obviously, that Salah missing isn't why Lloris Karius had his struggles and goal. Yeah. Pretty inarguably the worst game of his career, definitely yeah. since joining Liverpool. What do you feel towards Lloris Karius following that match? Obviously, a lot of people got on his skin. Every fan base has the worst bits of it. I'm not trying to say that Liverpool fans as a whole were like that, but obviously there were some threats to his life, his family, yeah. stuff like that. Obviously, I know you don't feel that way, but what were your feelings towards Lloris Karius after that match? Was it sympathy, anger? Just what were you feeling after that?
Straight away after the game, and I sort of switched off whilst I was traveling back. And then when I sort of like got in bed and, you know, everything settled down, I ended up taking to Twitter and getting emotional, as I often do. If anyone listening follows me, you may have seen it before. And I was sort of just like saying his mistakes were obviously inexcusable, and I just felt horrendous for the rest of the team. Like, I felt so sorry for them. Like, the performances they've put in to get there, especially the front three. I mean, it's been like this for a long time. We've had like sort of like these star players who put in these great performances, and then like one weak link or two weak links will let them down. It goes back to sort of like Torres, Alonso, Gerrard, Mascherano. It goes right all the way through to Salah, Coutinho, Firmino. So that sort of feeling continued. Obviously, I feel like Karius has let everyone down. But then as I settled in, as I thought about it a bit longer, I just feel so sorry for him. I mean, it's the biggest game of his career. It might be the biggest game of his entire career. I know he's only 24 years old, so he's a young guy. He's younger than myself, and I know that. I mean, it's obviously magnified massively for a professional footballer, but I know how those mistakes can sort of just like make you feel awful, and I can't even imagine what it feels like to make a mistake like that when there's so many people watching. I just ended up feeling so sorry for him. I kind of wish that he could sort of just get back on the horse and come back fresh next
instead
season
of having a whole off season.
Either that, like get straight back into a game, or maybe go away with Germany or whatever, and sort of like just move on. But I feel like that's not going to happen, and I'd love it if he was still the number one next season, simply because he's made some really vital saves, and I feel like he can really improve. David De Gea wasn't amazing. He was obviously great when he was 24, but he wasn't the keeper that he is now. So I kind of wish he could just move on and be number one. But if someone said to me, Zach, tomorrow Jurgen Klopp can sign, you know, Alisson for 70 million, would you say yes or no? I'd just say yes. But I feel bad saying it because I really want him to still do well at Liverpool, Karius. So yeah, it's one of those. I think a lot, it's a combination of inexperience and the fact that he's Jurgen Klopp's goalkeeper. I mean, Shaka Hislop, actually, I read quite an interesting piece that he said for ESPN, and he was sort of saying that both goals are basically caused by Karius wanting to like engage the play straight away again. So like obviously he's trying to roll the ball out to Lovren quickly to get Real Madrid under the cosh again, and he's just not checked. Normally a keeper will look left, look right, and look behind, and then sort of like get on with it. But he's not. He's just like, I mean, Benzema, he obviously still sees him. He's right next to him, but yeah, he's not made sure, and he's not fully concentrated. He's more worried about getting the play on again. Whereas sometimes you've got to look after the basics. And then the Bale shot, Hislop was sort of saying that his feet, he sort of thinks that looking at Karius' feet, that he wants to sort of like catch the ball and then, or like bounce it down, you know, like as the ball comes to him and then catch it, so that he can then like sprint out and like get the ball moving again with one of the defenders. And having looked at it again, I kind of agree with him, and the inexperience just comes in, because when Gareth Bale shoots, the ball changes direction about four times. I'm not saying it did on that shot, because it seemed to be quite straight, but it was dipping. So,
and it always comes at pace. That was actually, not to cut you off, that was something I was thinking of, is how many Premier League players are unleashing a shot from there that's going to have that much power and swerve on it?
Yeah.
Like that might be one of the first times he's seen that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not excusing him. He should save it. And the first one, it shouldn't be a goal either. But I think that's what it is. And his inexperience has just caught him out. Just save it. I don't care where it goes, just save it.
An optimist would say he won't make that mistake again.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully not. And that's where I say inexperienced. Now hopefully he's learned that now, and it won't happen to him again in his career. So, yeah.
And I think that's a huge part of development is, it's easy to forget the things that you've done well. It's very hard to forget the things that have been as catastrophic as that. So, hopefully he's the kind of person that will take it on and as we said, never make mistakes like that again. Unfortunately, with goalkeepers, we've also seen them have kind of tender temperaments at times. And I totally agree with you. Hopefully he will be able to get past this and move on. And hopefully it's for Liverpool. But as you said, I don't think Liverpool as a club after that performance can ignore external possibilities. Like they may not pursue them, but it's certainly their duty to look into it. All right. We will leave that individual match there. We didn't get to do this when we had Dave on previously because your season was not over. Now with the whole season completed for you, both English and European campaigns done, what did you make of Liverpool's season on the whole?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This has been the most enjoyable season I've ever watched of Liverpool since I started supporting them. Mm. Probably since I was like eight or whatever. I've absolutely loved it. Watching the second leg of the City game in Austria on a ski holiday, surrounded by Liverpool and City fans, to going to Liverpool for the final and celebrating when we're beating Brighton and like all the positivity around that. We've got top four again. We've solidified our place in the Champions League. The campaign to get to the final is definitely not going to notice. I think it's really put us back on the map in terms of foreign fans, players in other leagues that maybe don't get to see the Premier League all the time. I think it just helps us with that recruitment and hopefully we can follow the trend that we're setting with players such as Keita, Van Dijk, Salah, Mane, and then obviously just now Fabinho. So I think, and the money it's obviously gained as well. I mean, getting to the final of the Champions League gets you a hell of a lot of money. And so does qualifying again. So, yeah, it was in a really good way. The fan base is united. Everyone loves the manager. It's just, we were just a bad day, didn't we, on Saturday?
Yeah, which, by the way, some team has during every final. No hard feelings there, hopefully. Next, you just mentioned him, Fabinho. This is one of the quickest high-profile signings I may have ever seen. I know Tottenham did one like this with Nasser Chadli when he was leaving the Eredivisie, but these are slightly different levels there. First of all, how do you think that Liverpool kept this under wraps for so long? Because it sounds like negotiations had been going on for a while and that even Firmino had been involved, and you assume he wouldn't have been involved this week with the final coming up.
Yeah, I have no idea how they've kept it this quiet. Apparently, negotiations have been ongoing since February, which is obviously, at least 3 months then. It seems like, Michael Edwards has just been a very busy boy. And it's really good to see that Liverpool have learned from the whole Van Dijk saga from last season. Obviously, Southampton were understandably very angry with, you know, with certain details coming out too early. And then obviously Red Bull Leipzig just took us to town with Keita, and yeah, that was just as embarrassing in my opinion. So yeah, it's good to see that they've learned from the mistakes, but honestly, no idea how they kept it this quiet. First I heard of it yesterday, I was just playing on my Xbox and opened, and there's a couple of French journalists saying that Fabinho's on the brink of Liverpool. So, and then a couple of games later and he's wearing red. So yeah, honestly, I've never seen anything like it. Even on sort of like the final day of transfer windows, it's almost unheard of.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. It was almost just about an hour from the first report from, I think it's Mohamed Boufassi.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
With RMC. And then an hour later, there he is wearing his Liverpool kit, doing the whole appearance video, which very much looked like much of your PR time had started their vacation on Sunday. But you know, obviously you'd much rather have the player in and announced. He's obviously a very versatile player, a very good young player who should fit in with Klopp well. Where do you think he will fit in though? Obviously he can play as a central midfielder or a defensive midfielder. He's even played some right back. Where do you think he'll be most utilized?
I think in terms of as soon as I heard about the potential signing and then obviously the confirmation, my first thoughts turned to Liverpool maybe changing shape to 4-2-2-2, and Fabinho being in sort of like the double pivot with Naby Keita, so that'd be the DM. If that's the case, then I think we'll see Fekir joining him as well at some point, and then Mane, Firmino, and Salah completing the other three spots. If it was to be the same shape as this season, so 4-3-3, I think it'd be DM again. But very much filling in at fullbacks, sort of like in defensive transition. Because obviously we know he's got good experience at Champions League level and the French top division at right back. So yeah, very versatile. Sort of like better James Milner in some respects, because you know, with the multiple positions that they can fill in the squad, it means you don't have to go out and buy two specialists sort of thing. It just looks a great signing on paper. Apparently he runs close to 12 kilometers on average per game, which is incredible. Simon Brundish, I saw on Twitter, said in X amount of years, I'm not entirely sure how many years it was, but he's only missed 3% of the games, and that's obviously a great figure for someone who's so athletic and so dynamic, and you know, is so good at sort of dribbling at pace and running hard, so and going into tackles hard as well, because obviously he's got a bit of bite to him. He's not scared of picking up yellow cards. So yeah, it's good to see that he stays fit as well. I think it's a great sign. I'm really happy with it. I think the fee's quite reasonable as well, especially to apparently take him off Manchester United. Sort of thing is a little sweet bonus.
Certainly is. Then, basically, as soon as the kind of whirlwind of signing him faded, there were already journalists saying that it sounds like there will be another player added this week. Kind of rumors abound that it could be Nabil Fekir. Do you think that's who it will be? And if so, how do you think he'd fit in?
I don't know. In terms of how he'd fit in, I think, as I said just then, it possibly 4-2-2-2, and he'd play sort of like right attacking mid, Mane left attacking mid, then Salah Firmino sort of up front. Could also be 4-2-3-1 with Fekir coming off either side. If it's 4-3-3, then it'll be Keita and Fekir in the eights with Fabinho in the six. Hopefully he can be brought in. It'd be absolutely amazing. But it seems like he's taking his time with this one. Obviously, Lyon's his boyhood club. He doesn't want to rush into any decision. It kind of looks like it's the right time for him to leave and sort of like branch out and take the next step in his career. So I think he will end up leaving. Whether it's before the World Cup or not, it seems like he wants to do it after the World Cup, but the rumours aren't going away that it's going to happen before. I think it'd be a great signing. I'd love to see him in Liverpool red. I can't see it being anyone else this week if there is another signing. I mean, Alisson's obviously away with Brazil, and Fekir's obviously with France, but yeah, it's just mad. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, Fabinho, it literally just happened over the course of about 60 minutes. So it could be this week. I hope it is.
Yeah, well, you discussed goalkeeper. Obviously, Fabinho's already brought in. Fekir is being rumoured. Any other positions that you think Liverpool need to sort out this summer?
It'd be nice if we could sign a top-class right centre-back. Lovren's performances over the season have improved since Spurs sort of like dismantled him. And he was probably our best player in the Champions League final. I thought he played really well. Didn't really give anything away. Got the assist for Mane. Played superbly. But yeah, it'd be nice if we could get a really top quality right centre back, and then maybe goalkeeper, and then Fekir for the midfield. Potentially, I mean, I expect us to lose Danny Ings and Danny Sturridge. So I don't know whether we'd bring Divock Origi back in, and then maybe promote a young striker like Brewster when he comes back from his injury, or if we'd sign another striker and move Origi on as well as the other two. So maybe a striker, but I wouldn't be unhappy if we didn't sign a striker, so long as we sort of like brought Sturridge or Origi back into the mix. But I think Sturridge's time at Liverpool is coming to an end. So it'd probably be Origi, and then Solanke backing up like he has this season. Hopefully he can be more productive next season. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was going to say a sub winger, so the quality doesn't drop too much if Mane or Salah has to take time out. But if we were to sign Fekir, then he could probably come into that category, maybe playing a little bit more narrow. But yeah, and maybe Harry Wilson's out on loan at Hull as well. He'll be back, and I hope he gets some first team minutes too. So that'd do me fine. Fabinho, Fekir, and Alisson, that's fine.
Yep, that'll do. all right. Well, thanks so much, Zach, for coming on. No, the beginning was painful, but obviously hope in the second, and assuming that's probably why Liverpool are pushing out these transfers now. Tell the folks where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter, @ZachForster_. You'll find my Liverpool musings and World Cup musings ahead for the next month, is it? I apologize for my throat today, by the way. It's been a bit gone since Saturday after all the singing.
No problem.
thanks for having me on anyway.
Yeah, absolute pleasure having you on. I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Yep. Cheers, mum. See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.